Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guest to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Welcome everybody to the Mission Accepted podcast show. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I know that you're going to be listening and or viewing our guest today. I am so excited about, because if you know anything about me, you know that I'm a huge advocate of health and wellness. And look, all you crazy entrepreneurs out there, or people that are thinking of coming into this world of entrepreneurship, you need to take care of one thing, and that's you. You are your most valuable real estate asset. That's what I tell people. Like, you're just worth so much. And if you are listening because you love the inspiration and crazy stories of being an entrepreneur, you are not going to be disappointed today. But if you are running at full pace on passion, right, and just bypassing some of that stuff we're supposed to do for ourselves, being able to take care of your body and your health is going to sustain not only your passion and your joy, but it's going to give you a lot more energy. And so without further ado, I'm super excited to introduce Bill to come on to the show today. If you are not familiar with Bill Cohen, then you will most certainly be at the end of this interview, because his work is so, it's a very unique form of entrepreneurship. And we're going to ask him how this all came to be. Like most of us, things happen for a reason. And he took something that happened in his life and converted it into helping others. And I'm going to let him talk a little bit about that. But as you're listening to him, please let it sink in about taking care of yourself and people that you think would know his service. Because in all of the years that I've been working in brain health, and I've been doing that for a long time, I've been in this world for about 30 years, I haven't found anybody that is doing what he is doing for people to remove the stress of when you have someone that's not healthy in your family. So without giving away all of the fun gems and jewels of what this man has had to go through, Bill, welcome to the show.
Hey, Deb, I'm really honored to be here and I'm excited as well. Thanks for asking me on.
Absolutely. Well, we know that your services are needed. So, Bill, can you share with us a little bit on what it is that you do and maybe give us the background story on how does one come to this is what I'm going to do?
Well, that's a great question, because usually when I think back about 17, 18 years and what transpired, and that I'd be in, if you would ask me, I'd be sitting here talking to you today and doing what I do, I'd say, no way, you're crazy. You couldn't make up that scenario. It almost sounds like a script, because I'm living in Portland, Oregon. My mom's in Biloxi, Mississippi. As you can probably tell, I'm not from there. And I'm working full time. She's showing signs of something. We're not sure what, but some of the things we were seeing were mood swings, anxiety, anger, not taking care of the house, not taking care of the finances. She was in the caregiver role for my late stepfather. And we were wondering, if he passed away or went into a care facility, would she bounce back? We didn't get that opportunity, because what happened in August 2005 on the Mississippi Gulf Coast in New Orleans, Hurricane Katrina, the home that had survived all the other storms was completely swept away. Now, she was evacuated, but she fully expected to come back to that house, and it was destroyed down to the slab. Needless to say, the trauma of seeing it gone exacerbated, accelerated whatever was coming on with her. A lot of details I'll leave out, but some of them are the most salient points are, she ended up with family on the East Coast, first in North Carolina, and then in Florida. I started attending a support group. I started talking to a care community. doing the long distance caregiving, cross country travel. But one of the things that happened that I think points out the severity of the disease and my relationship with her, we had a very close, loving relationship. It was challenged, that's for sure. So what was happening was very shortly after the hurricane, she was out in the driveway of my step family and trying to escape. Needless to say, they didn't have a good relationship. And fortunately, somebody else in the family got her on the phone and said, Sheila, if you don't get back in that house, you may end up somewhere you don't want to be. Fortunately, she got the message. I get on the first possible flight back there, see mom, she's happy to see me. And I say to her, Mom, and this is going to be, some people use the term therapeutic lie, I like the term compassionate deception. Mom, we're going to go see a new doctor tomorrow. Oh, okay, that's nice. It's not what we were doing. We were going to the ER. We were going to the hospital. We were going to get her to see a geriatric physician and get her on some medication to calm her down because she was so agitated. This was the hardest emotional night of my life. I was with my mom in that ER in an adjoining conference room for about 10 hours. And she was like a caged animal. The tension on her face, I barely recognized her. But by the time she got admitted and the next day on medication, I come off the elevator. She sees me and says, there you are. There's my savior. Mm. It wasn't me. It was a disease. Mm-hmm. So it just illustrates how hard that can be. And don't take it personally. First little lesson, right? So going forward, she was with other family. I moved her out to Oregon while she was still ambulatory, while she still had reasonable cognitive ability. As expected, she was less than a year in assisted living, and then she was in 4 years in memory care. By the way, during this whole time, I'm holding down my full-time job, going to the support group, getting counseling, et cetera. I had a very difficult supervisor. So you can imagine where my stress level was, mm-hmm. sky high. Trying to do whatever self-care I could, including getting a massage and things like that. Self-care is not selfish, it's vital. So mom passes away. I was in the room with her that night at age 83, and this was 9 years ago last month.
Wow. And when you talk, so, you know, I feel like I want to take a deep breath, you know? So when you talk, so first of all, my heart goes out for you for going through that process and why we're going to get into what you do, because you know that you're not alone in that process. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I really heard very loud and clear is for you, and it could be for many, when you see that personality change. Now, I'm going to make an assumption because you haven't said she was diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's, what have you, you're going to get there. But the when you start to see the personality change, that's a very confusing time, particularly, I think, if you're the child or the younger sister or the younger brother or what have you, because you've known this person to be a certain personality and you actually know what they kind of are like when they're angry, you know, and there doesn't seem to be that just cause. It could be a plethora of things going on. It would be very hard to nail down and to be able to stand outside of that and observe that. Must have been a challenge. Is that a common trait that people could expect to see?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, okay. And I was actually in denial twice before mm-hmm. the hurricane. Oh, why would I assume that it was Alzheimer's? We knew she had some cognitive decline, maybe mild cognitive impairment. But we didn't jump to the conclusion it was Alzheimer's. Who would? And then when she had to move into memory care was happened to be right when she was running out of funds and having to go on public assistance. She was exhibiting, it was during a norovirus quarantine. She was exhibiting behaviors like eating non-foods, trying to exit and wander, escape. And the staff is saying, Bill, your mom needs 24/7 care. She cannot be left alone and she'll need to go into memory care. Well, isn't there some in between, some transition point? No, she needs to be in there. And I looked at the signs, the 10 symptoms from here in the States, the Alzheimer's Association, their Alzheimer's Society, is for Alzheimer's, increasingly she was showing all of them. So there was no question. We didn't need a diagnosis. We didn't need any more testing. We knew what was happening.
I think you make a great point about denial. And I think, I mean, I think that's across the board with many things, right? I know that when there's someone not well in the family, particularly if you're the parent or the child, you don't want that to be. It's kind of like people avoid doctor's appointments when they find a lump. And you're like, why didn't you get there 3 months earlier? Because conceptually, psychologically, you just can't digest it yet, right? And so tell me, I mean, you've had this experience, you went through that. I can't imagine the stress that you're going through, particularly if you were not in a supportive work environment, that makes it even tougher. Mm-hmm. And then you know, I don't know whether you had siblings or what have you, but everyone's got their whole, you know, emotional expression in the bucket, you know, making their own opinion. How did you go from that experience? I mean, I can see how emotionally you would go from that experience to wanting to help others. But how did you turn that experience into something that helped others, but yet you could also become an entrepreneur around? Like, that must have taken quite a bit of work to put together. Tell us about that a little bit.
Well, it didn't happen immediately because, interestingly, when I first started attending that support group, it was a good experience. If that had not happened with the support and the confidentiality and the information from other people going through a similar journey, everybody's a little bit different. If that had not happened when mom passed away, I might say, I'm done. I'm exhausted. I'm burned out. I'm through. However, it was a good experience. But after mom passed away, fortunately that supervisor retired and my stress level came down from sky high to perfect. I kept going for a little while to that support group. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll help others go through the journey for a little while, and like others did for myself. A few months later, I became the facilitator. I'm not going to get into the details, but it would kind of surprise me too that happened. And the same group, I'm still facilitating today, 16 plus years later.
Wow.
I got involved with the fundraising, the advocacy, and other volunteer work. But I still, as I approached retirement from 25 years working for the government, completely unrelated job, completely transportation department, that I thought I was just going to do more volunteer work. I came across this concept of a caregiving support consultant, said, I can do this. This may be what I need. And the way to sum it up is I took my personal loss, my pain, turned it into my passion and I love the term. Encore career. And so I provide compassionate, empathetic support because I've been there.
You know, I mean, for someone who's going through that experience, who has to deal with their own emotions around it, their own financial situation, like you know, you were able to get on a plane. You know, some people don't have that situation, or some people are, you know, they just had a baby. They just, like, there's so many dynamics. And I think, you know, I was talking to a woman this morning and she's very successful in the direct sales industry. And we're having this great business conversation. And we were talking about migraines because she's a migraine sufferer. And I used to be, right? And so I was giving her advice and telling her what to do for the brain and what have you. And because she is a highly successful woman that has to go lie down in between calls. And I'm like, okay, that's not a way to live. Let's look for a solution. But here's the thing. She's like, well, I've talked to this person. I've kind of talked to this naturopath. These doctors think I should take this drug. And, you know, and she's got, and I'm like, and I was thinking about you. I was thinking about you because what you do for people is you take all of that having to find. Like, that's one of the things that really drew me to having that first conversation with you is that you've taken what you've taken. You've known what you've known. You've got the years and experience. But one of the things that people don't know what to do is they don't know what to do. They don't know where to go. And it takes more than just one phone call to an association. Like, you're really looking at having to have like a plethora of resources. Mm-hmm. And my gosh, you're already overwhelmed. There's a loved one that's going through a challenge. You're worried they're not going to remember who you are. And so what are some of the resources that people come to you for? Like, what is it that people need help with in that state?
Well, let me take a step back, going back to when I did start my journey, is that there were fewer resources. It wasn't readily available to some people maybe old enough to remember the term, let your fingers do the walking through the yellow pages. Gen Zs might not be old enough to remember those, but we didn't have the directories information online even. It was still pretty much in its infancy. And today there are many more resources, but the problem is you don't know there's a lot of misinformation. You don't know where to turn. So yeah, I did a lot of calling. One, fortunately, again, the Alzheimer's organization was my first line of education, support, resources, including the support group. And there are many others. There in BC, there's a group called Family Caregivers of BC, for instance, as well as the national organization. So those are the places to start. Even though they have Alzheimer's in the name, they handle all types of dementia. When a lot of people don't know, there's over 100 types of dementia, but we've only usually hear about a few of them.
Wow. That's, you know what? I think that statement needs repeating. Like, there's over 100 types of dementia. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know with some of the research that I've done, you know, once people get over 75, it can go up to 50% of the population can have mm-hmm. some form of dementia. Mm-hmm. That's quite a statement. I definitely want in the conversation, I didn't want to interrupt you because I want to actually have you answer what kind of resources do people need that you can help them with. But maybe we can talk a little bit about some of the risk factors and some of the things people can do. But that's interesting. Thank you for highlighting that for us.
The important thing is there are, as I alluded to earlier, list of symptoms. But some of the easier things, you may be visiting family and you may say, mom's made this recipe for decades. Something's missing. It's not tasting the same. She may have left out one or two things. Hopefully she didn't put something in she shouldn't have. Or dad or grandma come out into the family room and they don't know why they're there. Or they keep asking the same question. When is Johnny coming? When is Johnny coming? When is Johnny coming? Things like piles of papers, unopened mail, bills, magazines, which may mean the finances are not being handled properly. That new car has scratches and dents that weren't there before. Or you go for a ride them and somebody's honking that, oh, aren't they being friendly? No, you just cut them off. Or you went through a stop sign. Those are cause for concern. And that's the time to have the discussion among the family. Or if you're seeing those signs yourself or somebody's telling you these things, be diagnosed, get tested, see the doctor, because the earlier that we can, even though there's no cure or treatment yet, the earlier that we can know what's going on through nutrition, through maybe some supplements, some medications for moods, et cetera, keeping physically, mentally, and socially active, we can slow, if not delay, the progression of the dementia.
Right.
We're not there yet as far as the silver bullet, the magic pill. We're getting close. The research is very promising. We're in what the Alzheimer's Association calls an historic period. And it probably won't. And I don't want to get into the risk factors in a moment, but I wanted to make this point that it'll probably be a combination of some medication and lifestyle choices.
Right.
Which goes into that subject. Most people have heard, and my mom's going to be the opposite of this, genetics and age. Genetics, nobody else in my family has it. Nobody else has Alzheimer's. Maybe some mild cognitive impairment. They're getting into their mid, late 80s, close to 90, okay? But dementia is not necessarily going to happen as you age. Yes, your risk factor goes up as far as genetics, but also with age, my mom was in her early 70s. That's not very old. But of course, we've also heard people getting early onset, 30s, 40s, 50s. Why? Can't just be genetics. Yes, there are some types of Alzheimer's. If you have a certain gene, one of your parents may have had it. That will raise your risk factors. Here's an example, though. My mom was living in Mississippi, as I said. Toxins, pollution, chemicals. She used to smoke. She didn't exercise. She barely walked the dog to the corner. she wouldn't get in a pool because there are kids in there.
Right.
She was socially isolated a few miles off the Mississippi Gulf Coast, off the coastline. And as I said, she was in my, she was the caregiver from my late stepfather. So she was getting stressed, worn down. And finally, she was a master printmaker. Besides being a whiz on a Mac and her finances, she was an artist, and she was etching into metal plates and soaking them in a, into an acid bath for like 30 years. So she's like the poster child that it's not just genetic and age. It's going to be your environment and your lifestyle and behavior choices, which gets into not eating, you to use the acronym crap, which isn't just the literal crap, but also like the carbonated colas, the added sugars, the processed and artificial foods. You're probably better off on something like, not necessarily for everybody, but something like the Mediterranean diet.
Right.
And avoid all the junk food.
There's so many factors to it, right? And I think that it's a great thing that we're talking about. People will be like, that's interesting. I think it needs to be an interesting conversation. And one of the things of being in brain health, and I've taught about it, and I stood on stage and, you know, talked about in very simple layman's terms, certain things that people can do to have a better optimized brain. And, you know, it's interesting because people, you know, you can say, does anyone have any questions? And it's not the conversation of people like going, hey, like, you know, when you're talking about marketing or digital marketing or, you know, all those other, you know, kind of sexy topics, but it's the text after, it's the conversations, it's the sidebars, because there's something about noticing a change in your brain that people keep quiet. Mm-hmm. Like, how many people walk into the kitchen and go, damn, I was in here for something. What am I in here for? Or they walk into the garage, or they start to create systems for themselves. I'm always going to put my keys there. I'm always going to put my phone there. I'm always going to do that to make it easy, because people are running around wondering where their glasses are and they're on the top of their head, you know? And so we notice these little things, but we do two things. One, we kind of dismiss it and don't tell anybody. I mean, you sit around with your girlfriends and go, oh my gosh, I forgot my keys three times this week. You know, you don't. The other thing is that we accept it as a natural progression of getting older. And I love what you say about lifestyle and environment and doing a check-in, because it doesn't have to be. We've had progression in that. Can you talk a little bit about the self-care that you needed while you were going through that process, that people should really be, you know, doing a little check mark for themselves, us superhumans out here with capes on it? Yeah.
Absolutely. What I do want to go back to one point with what you were talking about with the keys or the glasses or what have you, or the certain room. It's not a matter of, let's say you go in the garage and you forget why you went in there. If you forget what the garage is for, or if you forget what the keys are for.
Right.
Or did you put the cell phone in the microwave rather than by the door before you go out? So that is one of the key differences. So self-care can take many forms. And in my case, again, the support group was key. Getting counseling was key. Going for a massage, getting my sleep, eating well. I got to the point, however, a good example, when I was getting to the last few months before my mom passed away, suddenly my back starts killing me and it's getting worse and worse. And I kept putting it off. I got to take care of mom, right? Finally got to the point where I could not ignore it. And fortunately, make a long story short, I didn't go through surgery. I got the swelling down, the inflammation down in a few months, but I realized I had to take care of me so I could take care of mom. Fortunately, about 6 weeks after I was in my worst shape, 2 days after mom passed away, we were in Costa Rica and I was even zip lining and hiking.
Good for you.
So, you know, because people said, Bill, you do everything right. Yeah. Why'd you get it? I don't know. The only thing I could figure is that I was sitting wrong in the chair or in the car or without enough support.
Without support. I mean, the back is the support of the body, right? Yeah. So when you think of Cohen Caregiving, and it's a company that you created that support consultants. And so let's give people a picture, because your entrepreneurial business is the rarity, very well needed. So I'm someone who's noticing these differences either in myself or my partner or my family member or what have you. And I don't know where to go, but someone says, you know what, you need to call Bill because he's going to put you in the right direction. I mean, for me, that's the conversation I'd be having with someone who's like, you know what, because this has many variables. Talk to Bill. He'll put you in the right direction. What can someone expect when they come, and what do they get from your services?
Mm-hmm. You made a good point, because that's how I felt 16, 17, 18 years ago. I didn't know where to turn. I needed somebody like me, and somebody like me didn't exist, because so often, rightly so, the care recipient, the person with dementia, is the focus, because they can't care for themselves and they can't advocate or make decisions for themselves. Right. So, but the problem is that nobody, especially in the medical profession, is saying to the caregiver, how are you doing? What support do you need? What resources do you need? So you mentioned some of the words that people think about or how they are feeling as caregivers: overwhelmed, exhausted, scared, alone, hopeless. You can go on and on and on. So I try to help them. Imagine if somebody could go help them through their journey, like I went through with my mom, on all the different issues, and provide advice, resources, support, referrals, help them manage the care and the behaviors, practice self-care, practice prevention, preventative health, and help them reduce their stress, help them sleep better at night. And one of the things I do is coordinate the team, pull them all together. Some people say I'm a coach, navigator, quarterback, pick a term, and bring together all the different service providers, professionals, to help take care of both the caregiver and the care recipient, whether it's elder law attorney, the CPA, the financial person, adult respite, home health care, housing advisors, you name it, whatever they need. That's what we do. Right now, I'm helping a family in Northern California and Nevada, and got them in touch with actually somebody here in Oregon, an occupational therapist who could help them virtually. Yes, we could use one there, but I knew how she worked and that she could help them. As well as now we're talking to a daycare nearby and looking at, okay, what is the contingency plan for as dad progresses? And if he keeps falling, he's not going to be able to stay in the house. Okay, bringing in more care is probably not going to be enough. And his wife, the stepmom, is in a position where she's getting worn down. She's getting burned out. She can't care for him, let alone pick him up anymore. So right. They need to be looking at housing options. And the best time to be thinking about it is probably now, when you're seeing those first signs, not reacting in a crisis, but being proactive. Planning, preparing, because if you're reacting in a crisis, not only is it going to be an emotional, you're going to have fewer options.
Yeah, you could be down on a deadline or a timeline, or something needs to happen right away. I would imagine that people would have financial concern. Like, are you able to, like, I know that you're US based and you're very active in North America. I mean, obviously I'm up here in Canada. I can't wait to see you next month.
Yes.
So where is there resources for people? Are you able to provide resources? Like, I know you're going to need help with this, or I mean, that must be a part of it that stresses people out.
Oh, yeah, because it Alzheimer's alone is extremely expensive. It is the sixth leading cause of death in the States, probably close to that, if not the same, in Canada or other countries. And it is the most expensive out of all those, and it has no current cure or treatment. So if people don't have the resources, long-term care insurance, things like that, it is going to be a drain. It is going to be difficult. And this is where they need to get together with an elder law attorney, a good financial person who understands the programs, the proper way to set things up in terms of financially and legally, so that does not impoverish the family. And there's a lot of misinformation again out there. The same thing may work for one family may not work for another.
Right.
People talk about getting a divorce. People talk about getting an annuity. Talk about, oh, you got to impoverish one spouse and blah, blah, so forth. That's what you need an expert for. Yes, there is public assistance in both countries that will help people like that. Like I said, mom did go on in the States, Medicaid, the last few years. She had some income, but it didn't cover everything. My stepfather passed away. That increased her income. Still didn't take care of everything, but everything else was taken care of by the state. And then when she passed away, if there had been anything left, it would have reverted to the state. But proper planning with the right advice, that is key. You don't have to impoverish yourself. You, by planning ahead and not ignoring it, you can make the right steps and help yourself as well as your loved one. It's unfortunate that you mentioned something earlier about any siblings and family support. I was very fortunate that my family members, it was a little bit of collaborative. It was a little bit of tag team sequential, but I was the point person. I was the primary caregiver. And yes, I have a sibling, probably better than he wasn't involved, but we won't go into that. But
that's common. That's common. And you can support in that. Yeah.
Some people are either unwilling or unable. Some people have other agendas, monetary or otherwise, or they just don't want it, they can't deal with it. And they say, I'm not going to help, this is yours.
Yeah.
And too often, unfortunately, it falls upon one person, majority, yes, women, because they've been traditionally in the caregiving role, caretaking, nurturing role. Fortunately, men are stepping to that role more and more in recent years. I heard back about when I was starting in the States with dementia was like one out of every five was a male. Now it's like one out of every three. And I see a lot of them in my support groups and my clients, including that family I was just talking about, in Northern California, Nevada, four sons.
Right.
And they're all on the same page.
Woo.
They're taking care of their father and the stepmother, as well as their birth mother. And they don't have to agree on every little item. But you have to be at least be on the same page. And when I hear that, I say, bravo, good for you. You're a step ahead of the game. It's right. When people have the hidden agendas or the ulterior motives you have to watch out for. Can I do a quick little piece of advice that I love?
So absolutely.
This will really helps the caregiver. So a lot of time, now with my case, my family, my aunts in particular, had a lot of opinions, a lot of advice, but two things. They had mom's best interests at heart, and they knew my name was on the durable power of attorney. So I had the final say. In too many cases, there are people who are either at a distance or they're not involved, and they have a lot of opinions. So what I tell people is, and they're not helping, right? You have two approaches. One, oh, that's a really good idea. Why don't you take that on? So what's going to happen there? One of two things. They're either going to shut up and you won't get that unsolicited advice anymore, or they may actually pitch in and help. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll do that. Maybe. Don't hold your breath. The other is you can reply, that's a good idea. I'll consider it, and then ignore it, especially if it is not in the best interest of your family member that you're caring for.
Right. So, yeah. Right. And well, thank you. I'm sure there's
about a lot of the things that can do for helping to manage the care and the behaviors of your loved one. We've been primarily talking here about the caregiver so they can take care of themselves and what have you. And there's a lot of things that people can still do even during the pandemic. You can go for a walk. You can go read a book. You can get in a tub with some essential oils and bubble bath or wine or candles or whatever turns you on, whatever relaxes you. Again, massage became one of my big things. Mm-hmm. I realized that it was not a luxury. It was a necessity.
Right.
And it continues to this day.
So, Bill, you are in Portland, Oregon, yes. But, you know, like all of our business these days, they cross boundaries. Yes. So we're going to encourage people to reach out to you. I know that you have some complimentary what do we have it here? You know, not just tips, but complimentary information that's important at whatever stage people are at, that you can send them off an email. So kind of as we're wrapping up here, is there anything that you want to share in terms of what it is that you do for people, how they can reach you on both sides of the coin, if they're needing care themselves or they're having to prepare for somebody, at what point that should they reach out? Maybe just give us some of that information and let people know, hey, I'd like to talk to Bill. So how can they find you?
No problem. So again, the earlier the better. When you're seeing those first signs, it's better to be proactive and start early as possible. And yes, like everybody else, I do have a website. My last name is Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, caregivingsupport.com. Email very similar, bill@cohencaregivingsupport.com. On there, you can schedule an appointment. Initial consultation is complimentary, no strings. I'd be happy to send you either a list of a free list of my favorite tips for managing care, as well as for caring for the loved one. And the other would be for some self-care tips. And one of them is on a, and I'm going to put it on both of them pretty soon, is a dry erasable memo board, which can go right where you're going to be talking about your person living with dementia, your loved one, their refrigerator.
Exactly.
People love that.
Well, and the other thing that you do, because this is how we met, you know, we met at a forum where people were speaking. I know that you are, you know, very kind in relationship to speaking as much as you can. So if there are people out there that do have podcasts or radio shows or TV shows or speaking forums, that the more people, I mean, it's one thing to learn about the disease, and then there's not a lot of people talking about, hey, I can help you there. So then it gets left for people to figure out themselves. And so I know that if there's anyone listening and they would like for you to come on to their, into their media platform or speaking engagement, that you're a fantastic speaker. I've had that relationship with you, that you are also speaking as well. So I think that's important to know, because if you can talk to one, and, you know, great to talk to many, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Podcasts, business groups, care communities, you name it. I love to do it. Besides telling my story, I love to turn it into an interactive question answer, like a support group, so they get a feel for what it's like. So they will feel comfortable if they run into that situation. It's not something to be scared of. It's something that you'll find very beneficial.
Yes, because like I said, even when you talk about the brain, sometimes people want to talk to you at the side or after the conversation. But when you're in a forum like I was with you, you're able to talk about it. And then all of a sudden, people are having those conversations in a very, what feels like, open, safe environment, right?
Exactly.
That's important. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. To date, you're definitely the most unique entrepreneur that we've seen. I've never met anyone that does what you do yet. I hope that you train many and have a whole team, because obviously you're very well needed with the numbers that you shared with us today about being, you know, the sixth in North America anyways. And so thank you so much for coming on. If anyone wants to get in touch with Bill, you've received and heard his information, but of course we're going to have it all in the show listing as well. So feel free to just click through. And once again, we appreciate you so much. For our listeners and our viewers, if you found value in this, please share this podcast with anybody and everybody that you feel needs to hear what you heard today. And if you feel like, hey, I'd love to be on the show, oh my gosh, reach out. Love to have a conversation with you and see how you are living your life and how you are accepting the mission. So our show is for entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs, creatives, and people in media. So if you are a solopreneur in any of those, give me a call and I'd love to have a chat with you. So again, thank you for being on the show, Bill. Thank you, listeners and viewers, and keep sharing, and we will talk to you next week. Bye for now.